Trying to get through this. And very shortly we're going to start Tehillim. Only a couple of days we're going to start Tehillim. I have to make sure we have them in stock. That's going to be our new plan. Sefer Tehillim. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu Melech HaOlam Shehakol Nieh B'Dvaroi. We're not going to learn Tehillim the way we've been learning until now. It's going to be more general. I don't want to spend more than a day or the most two on a mizmar. So we're gonna have a different style in how we learn Tehillim. We'll see. But in Yirat Hashem, we're coming there. We're getting there. Okay, so let's finish up with this Amar Chazal. It's on page. We're almost finished. The microphone. It's on page 898. We're almost finished with this psukim. We're up to Omer B'Yochanan, Minayin Shem Mispalulim. It's again on page 898, towards on the very bottom of the page, under the title of Likutei Shas U'Midrashei HaTanoim. It's about halfway down, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 lines from the top of this section. Omer Rabbi Yochanan, Minayin Shem Mispalulim Al Roiv HaToivah Shetiposek. How do you know that a person should never dive into Hashem too much? Hashem, there's too much. There's too much bracha. We have too much money. The person should never be misspelled. Shneimar hovilas kol hamaser beisoyzer ve'arikus from bracha ad b'li dai. Ad b'li dai, a person is going to get worn out from saying dai. Why doesn't the person just say to Hashem enough? Let him be misspelled. The bracha should stop. Mikav, from here we learn shezoy midas shal kodesh baruch hu ve'ini roli espalo shloimale esritzaynei. And this is the need of Kodesh Baruch Hu, and it's not fitting that a person should be mispalel, that Hashem should not give a person bracha ad b'lidai. Ad b'lidai means it's too much. So why is it too much? Just say to Hashem, and not stop. If you'll say to Hashem, I don't want to make more than $100,000. So then a person's lips are not going to get worn out from saying that. He's not going to get worn out. This person will just barely survive, or he'll survive very well, but he's not going to get exhausted from there being too much blessing. So how does it ever come to such a point where a person's lips are worn out from saying die? The person should have been mispalel. Obviously, he's a good person. We have a right to assume that Hashem will answer his prayers. And the answer from this would be learned indirectly, that a person should never, ever be mispalel to Hashem, that there's too much blessing. And this touches the concept that we say every single day in davening. Shamra Zois. In the Asher Valitzion, I won't embarrass myself, because I say the same things every day. I won't say it correctly, but in the Asher Valitzion, there's an interesting pasuk, which it really comes from Moshe Rabbeinu, comes from the Talmud of the Mishkan. The Hamalacha Hoysa Dayo Vahoyser. Moshe Rabbeinu, when they made a campaign to build the Mishkan, so Vayaviru Kol B'machneh. Okay, they sent out a message, we're taking donations. We have set up all these different online funds. These raise it and charity, all the different GoFundMe, right? There are a lot of all different types of online resources to raise money, and everyone is doing it today. Every yeshiva does it today. It's very interesting, very powerful, very. I'm sure you all give donations. It's extremely powerful how they do these campaigns. The basic way you do the campaign is you shame people. That's always been exact. How do you make an appeal? We make an appeal in Shulchan Shabbos. What's an appeal all about? Is that how much are you giving? How much are you giving? How much are you giving? So this so-and-so is giving $100. This one is giving $500. This one is giving this. So everyone feels shame.
You got pressure. That's what I call out the pleasure.
Of course, right. You shame people into giving money. And if you have a person who knows what they're doing, you don't go start off with $18. You start, because if you start with $18, then the next one's going to give, I'll give $15. So you start off with, this one's giving $1,000. Oh, if he's giving $1,000, I have to at least give $500. If the big reviewer is giving $18, I'll give $10. So there's incredible psychology. He had a PhD in analyzing fundraising and different techniques and how you shape people. So these online websites where your campaigns, charity and funding and raise it, is the techniques are just incredible, because they basically, you send it out to all of your friends and everyone is exposed how much they, and there you can't make believe, because there they're not going to put your name and your comments unless you actually paid. The credit card went through and the money was given. And then at the end, like, you know, there's a drum roll. The technique is just incredible. And obviously it works and it's extremely popular. And the technique is really, it's mind-boggling how, you know, technology and people have used technology in a very, very smart way.
The story that the rabbi went to each one and asked them how much they give in Texas somewhere. So Big Joe says to him, I give $5,000. Okay. At the field, the rabbi said, and Joe gives $10,000. He wants them. Oh, I'm sorry, I'm going to announce that you give only $5. No.
Okay, these all these krum kinds, all these all I can tell you is that when I die, they cut this out. There was one year where a person gave a lot of money, right out in the yeshiva for psicho for gesha. So it started out very serious. A person, a very wealthy person, gave a lot of money to the yeshiva for gesha, and they had an appeal. You know, they gave all they auctioned off all the aliyahs, then it came to gesha, and like really an outrageous amount of money. And then the following year, because this person gave a very large amount of money, I don't know how this all came about, is where people basically, to get up to that bid, people like, it became like an entertainment almost. Okay, we're now Gesha. So you have a guy there, I'm giving $500. You giving $500? You don't even have a nickel. No, I'm giving, because the person would ultimately, let's say, give $20,000. I'm just making up numbers. And then another guy is $800. This guy, $1,000. You people don't have a penny to your name. You're paupers. Because ultimately this guy was going to give $20,000, because that was the way it was every single year. So a guy comes, so people, everyone there, you know, everyone knows each other. It's not a big place, not such a big place. It was a joke, okay? It was entertainment. But one year, there were a couple of guests who came for Yom Tov, and they were sitting in the audience in the shul. Okay, well, now we're auctioning off psicha for Geshem. Starting bid is $100, and then okay, $300. Then go $5, and the guests, I was looking at their eyes were popping out. What? This guy is bidding a Kohel Yunger man, doesn't have a penny to his name. He's bidding $5,000, and then all of a sudden, one of like a little kid, a 13-year-old kid. $6,000, and these guests were like, they were literally, their eyes were popping out. And then the guy, by one point, he announced, okay, Rabbi Sai, Adkan, anyone who bids now has to pay. Okay, the joke is over. Mikanu lahaba, if you're gonna bid, you gotta pay. Okay, so there's a lot of chokhmah in fundraising. Here we say in the Asher Valitzion, we say Shamra Zois, where's the word? Shamra Zois, Liyetzim Achshu Lois Levav Mecha, Vachim Levav Lecha. I'm all mixed up, right? Where is this? In Pesuk Dezimra. No, this isn't in the Pesuk Dezimra.
What are you trying to get?
I'm trying to find that Pasuk.
Yeah,
where is the Pasuk? Shamra Zois. How come I don't know what this Pasuk is?
Yeah,
this,
it's in the Valetzio. Yeah, that was like the...
Right in the corner, but who rachum? Go on, fine. Hashem, okay, so here it is. Hashem Elokei Avraham, Yitzchak v'Yaakov, Avraham Yitzchak v'Yisrael, Avraham Yisrael, Avraham Yisrael, Shomera zois le'olam li'yetzer machshavos levav amecha v'hachein levavam elecha. This pasuk appears in Divrei Hayomim, and Chazal interpret this in reference to, if not mistaken, the Hakamas HaMishkan, where Moshe Rabbeinu made an appeal, and people were very generous. Vayaviru kol b'machne, and donations came flooding in, and to the point where they had the Hamalacha Hoyser Dayam v'Hoyser, they had more than what they needed. So Moshe basically said, Vayaviru kol b'machne. They stopped. So, are you talking? Didn't we just learn over here today in Malachi that a person should never be mispalel to Hashem too much bracha? So you would assume by extension, you should not ask people not to give. Did you ever hear of an organization that will send out a letter to their donors, we have enough money, no one should give any more donations. It's unheard of. If so, just like we learn now that a person should never be mispal to Hashem, Hashem, I have more than I need, and stop giving me blessing. Al achas kama v'kama, you'll never say to another human being, we have more money than we need for our organization, you should stop sending in donations. How then could Moshe Rabbeinu send out a kol b'machne and tell them, stop? It's a tough question, which there really isn't such a great answer for. Now the answer has to obviously be that the Mishkan is different than any other fundraising project in the world, because the Mishkan was the perfect structure. Everything had to be perfect. And by the Mishkan,
everything had to be accounted for.
It's a tough, difficult question. Well, you can't go put away things for later on for a rainy day. Eventually, they're going to need to make tab replacement. They're going to need to do maintenance. Maintenance, and there's going to be, so the answer is no. The Mishkan did not need maintenance. The Mishkan operated on a lemala mederech hateva. The question is still better than the answer, because we learn from Kadosh Baruch Hu, this passage that a person should never be mispalel, that Hashem should. But there is one thing that Chazal do derive. Moshe Rabbeinu said to Klal Yisrael, this is an exception, where we can't take any more because everything has to be perfect. But your desire to give and to keep on giving more than what we really need for the Mishkan, I beg of you, Shomra Zois Le'olam. This attitude that you want to give, even though we have more than what we need, guard this midah in your neshama forever. In every generation, pass this over to your children, your grandchildren, your great-grandchildren, that throughout Jewish history, when an institution, when a yeshiva, when a shul, when an organization, a chesed project, when they need money, give ad belidai. The Mishkan is an exception, because the Mishkan is divine. And something that is divine has to be with the ultimate precision, not lois litigra, v'lois soisef, just like in the mitzvahs. In the mitzvahs of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, there's an iser derayis about it. Why about toisef? If the Torah says you're only supposed to have in your tefillin four parashios, so what's so terrible? We'll stuff into the tefillin a couple of more parashios. I'll put in my tefillin my bar mitzvah parasha. What would be so terrible? Right? Why not? Torah says, so I have the minimum. Everything in the Torah is the bare minimum. Do a little bit more. Like when you drive on the highway, it says 55 miles an hour. That's the minimum. That's not, you don't get a ticket going more than 55 miles an hour. That's the minimum. Shomra Zois Le'olam. So Moshe Rabbeinu said to Klal Yisrael, this need, this yearning that you want to give more than what we need, guard this desire. Because it will come in very handy for Klal Yisrael in future generations. In future generations, when they're going to need to raise money, and they'll need a lot more than what they will actually request. A yeshiva can never have enough money. I think Meir once told me that there's a mesorah, that there's a malach in Shemayim, who is not only a malach, there's a SWAT team. There's a whole SWAT team in Shemayim of Malachim. As soon as they see a Torah institution approaching 70% of their budget, all alarms go off, and they're dispatched to this world to make sure they don't reach 70% of their budget. Because 70% of the budget is just enough for the institution to keep their doors open, but yet be in a very bad state of financial state. You ever hear of an institution that's financially stable? Never. There's no such Jewish institution that is financially stable. Every institution is always, always in the red. So there's this Mesorah in Shemayim, of an institution, they're about to reach 70% of their budget without going and begging for more money? No. SWAT team is sent down to this earth to prevent them from reaching that. That's unfortunate, that's the curse of Golis. But Shamra Zois Li'olam. So how do you balance Shamra Zois Li'olam? It parallel, they really go together. Moshe Rabbeinu to the Klal Yisrael, I have to tell you, Vayaviru kol b'machne lo seitze ish mimukoymoy. In other words, stop giving donations. We have more than what we need. Vayaviru kol b'machne vayikolei ha'om mehavi. People listen, they stop giving donations. But Moshe said, this is a hayro ashah to stop. In general, you have to give more than what we need, because look at this pasuk, uvechonuni no bezois im loy harikos lachem bracha ad beli dai. This luchara is the makar of shamu zois liyola. Give more than what we need. Don't ever ask Hashem to stop. If you don't ask Hashem to stop, don't ask people to stop. Yeah.
It's interesting that you would pick something to show the exception to the rule, because this quotation from Tainus is in the context of the story of Choni HaMagel,
right? So
who also violated that rule.
Right. So what's the story of Choni HaMagel? There was a drought. He entered into a circle. He drew a circle around the floor, and he said, Hashem, I'm not leaving the circle until it rains. And it began to pour. It began to rain, and then it began to pour. And Choni HaMagel said, Hashem, I'm not getting out of the circle. I didn't ask for a flood. I didn't ask for another marble. Noach was last week. We're up to Lech Lecha. I didn't ask for a marble. Is this what I asked for? And then it stopped. So Rav Michal is asking that Choni HaMagel violated this pasuk of Harikosi Lechem Brach Ad Blidai. It is not their heritage to ask Hashem to stop delivering blessing. The truth is, you have to study the Gemara. It's not necessarily a violation, because when the waters are so much, it's damaging. It's a flood. It's lethal. That's not called bracha. That's not what he asked for. He asked for gishmei bracha. There's gishmei bracha and there's gishmei klala. The marble was gishmei klala. So you'll say, what did money? Too much money is a curse. Is that really true? Too much money is a curse? For some people, it is. It is. Like I told you once, not that long ago, I listened to a shiur from a very wealthy person who's very successful, and he said, he quoted a chazal that states that when Hashem gives a person an enormous amount of money, more than what he needs, it's for one of three reasons. Number one, it's a nisayon. A nisayon means Hashem is testing him to see if he can handle the money, because for many people, more money than what they need is a curse. It's a nisayon. The other reason is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows he will pass, and Hashem is using him as a custodian. There are certain people to whom Hashem used as a treasurer to distribute money to institutions, to people, to causes. And Hashem has his people to whom he uses as a custodian. He gives them an enormous amount of money, and they're very generous. They give to those causes. And then he says there are people to whom Hashem gives money, this is very frightening, to punish them. Because it's for them, it's a curse. They have it is absolutely certain in the eyes of Hashem that the money that they have will destroy them. People who are very, very wealthy, unfortunately it's a reality, they become very different people. They become very arrogant. very, they have a very horrible outlook on life towards other people, and they become thoroughly corrupt. And it's a technique of driving them out of Olam Haba. So for some people, too much money is an outright curse. For some people who are at Tzaddikim, Kodesh Baruch gives them the wealth as to be custodians for Hashem to distribute to the needy. And some people, it's a nisoyon. Vohe Elokim nisa es Avraham. So here we have a person receiving bracha ad bundes. By choni hamagol, it would seem that he was saying to HaKadosh Baruch Hu that in this instance of giving too much rain, it's a curse. That's not what I asked for. So then you have to analyze. So let's say a person gets more than he needs. Is it a nesoyin, or are you a custodian? How does that all fit into this Maimer Chazal that a person should never say to Hashem, I have more than I need. I do not want any more.
Today, I remember Rabbi Miller saying that Ashirus is a bigger nisayon than poverty.
Absolutely, but most of us would say, bring it on.
Test me.
Is there any person that would say, I don't want to win the lottery? I don't want to win, even though it is a fact. It is an established fact with research. And every single person who won the lottery, I don't know everyone, but the vast majority of people who won the lottery, if you'll ask them 25 years later, they'll say that it was...
Not even
what?
Not even
5 years later?
Yeah.
They will say it is the worst thing that ever happened to me.
Yes.
It is the worst thing. I remember I was a little kid and I read this article in the New York Times magazine section. Remember the old days that New York Times was a kosher paper? And the Sunday New York Times? It take you a whole year to read the Sunday New York Times. And they had the magazine section, and on the cover of this magazine they had a case study, which is amazing. They went back 25 years, and they had, I think they had 10 people whom they followed for 25 years. I was a little kid, and that must have really gone back a very long way. And they followed them for 25 years, people who won the lottery. You had a choice, you take a lump sum in one shot, a half money goes to taxes, or they pay it out every month, you get a check. And they follow these people who won enormous amount of money in those days, whatever it was. And every single one of these people said it was the worst thing that ever happened to them in their life. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't go after it. I'm going from rags to riches. And one of the main things I remember is what happens is, let's say a person today who just barely survives, he wins, let's say, $20 million. Make believe, $20 million. So first of all, half the money goes straight to taxes. So you go from 20 million to 10 million. And let's say you're not getting it, you're getting it over 25 years. So do the math. You're not getting, you have $10 million over 25 years. Every single one of your friends and every single member of your family and your family and chavre, including the yeshivas that your kids go to and the shuls and the davening and everyone. And first of all, it is impossible to hide the fact that you won the money. There is nothing a person can do in this world to hide.
People find out eventually when someone
gets $20 million. They remember this from 25 years ago. I remember this article so many years ago. I don't know. They wrote there, it is impossible to be anonymous. Other than people who won the ticket, they're going to sneak in, they're going into the office to get the money. Yeah, maybe you can sneak in, but eventually everyone that you know in your world will find out at some point in time. May take a couple of months, may take a year. Usually it's instant. They will find out that you won $20 million. Now, you didn't really win $20 million. You won $10 million. That's a fact. Half the money goes straight to taxes. And the money's going to be paid out usually, if it's going to be paid out, you're not getting $20 million in one shot over 25 years. But every single person you know in your world, in your orbit, they know that they heard that you won $20 million. In their mind, this is the psychology, if you won $20 million, in their mind, you won $100 million. If someone wins $20 million, every single person that they know thinks they won $100 million. You won $100 million, they can't buy me a house? I need a house. What's the big deal? You give me $1 million. I'm your brother. I'm your cousin. The shul, you can't go and sponsor the building for us. This one, you can't pay tuition for the whole yeshiva. The expectations that people have who find out are thoroughly unrealistic of every single one of your chaverim and members of your family. And very quickly, they resent the fact that you do not hand over the $100 million that you want. It's not fair. Why you? And that disbelief and that jealousy, it turns into hatred, turns into, and relationships are destroyed. The relationships that take years to develop, gone out the window. So this is scientific research. Follow the science. Yet, I don't think there's a person alive today that will say, test me. By me, it's going to be different. I'll buy a ticket. I also buy tickets once in a while, lottery tickets. Test me. Give me the money. Well, let's. I'm going to beat the system. So, Hashem gives a person money. It's not so pashut. By Yitzchak Avinu, it says by Yigdal Ish, it says Me'oid Me'oid. There's a Chazal in that pasuk. By Yitzchak Avinu, he became very wealthy little by little. Little by little, the best wealth is when the person Hashem gives the person the bracha, where the wealth accumulates little in small steps. That gives the person the ability to grow with the money and to develop his relationships in a responsible way. In getting just a chef is not so pashut. But this over here, this pasuk here is definitely a pasuk, and the Mamori Chazal definitely touch upon people who come into wealth, enormous wealth, in a very short period of time. V'hari koisi lochem brocha ad b'li dai. Anyone that Darshan's writes an article in the New York Times about people who win the lottery and he's an Orthodox Jew and wants to put this in terms of an Orthodox Jewish hashkafa, how could you not open up a Sefer Malachi and quote this pasuk and study the commentaries and analyze the psychology of what's going on? A chazal like this, a person should never ever say to Hashem, "Don't I have enough? I have more than what I want." And the whole point of that, he told Hashem, "This is not what I asked for. You've sent down to this world too much rain. What about the pasuk? What about the Mishkan? Vayikolei ha'amehavi. Stop bringing." What about the pasuk that we say every single day in Ashrei Volatzion? Shamra Zois Le'olam. This feeling that you want to give more and more, even more than what we need for the Mishkan, we don't want to accept your donations. But the attitude, the willingness to give, don't ever let that go away, because the time will come in your lives and in Jewish history where tzedakah organizations need desperately money for their work. Let's go further. Okay, we're up to over here. The next Chazal, Amar Yeshua ben Levi. It's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 on the bottom now. On page 898, Amar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, Shloisha Devarim, Asu Bezdin Shalmata, the Eskimu Bezin Shalmaila Aliyah. There are three things that were done to Bezin Shalmata, and the Bezin Shalmaila gave their approval. Elohim, Mikra Megillah, the Muslim will explain. This was done by, it's very bizarre Chazal, that the Bezin Shalmaila, the Bezin Shalmata needs the approval of the Bezin Shalmaila. You don't need the approval. Torah Lava Shemayim. One of the basic principles of Yados is that when Moshe Rabbeinu brought the Torah down from Shemayim, what did that mean, that Hashem came down from Shemayim to give the Torah? What was in essence happening was Hashem was giving man shlita, authority over the Torah. Why did we need Matan Torah? Moshe Rabbeinu will tell us what it says in the Torah. We'll practice the mitzvahs. The whole event of Matan Torah was a ceremony where Hashem handed over power. He gave over the reins of authority to Klal Yisrael Torah lav bashamayim. You have a halachic dilemma. The Torah allows for different interpretations. Torah is abstract. There are major abstractions in the Torah, and it can be understood many different ways. And the one that has the final decision of halacha and the correct approach to the hashkafa is Chazal. Chachmeinu zichronim levracha. That's a major event to hand over the power, the authority. That was the whole event of Matan Torah. So the question then is, what over here does it mean over here in this Maamar Chazal, where that the Bezdin Shel Mata instituted various takanos, and the Bezdin Shel Maila, they gave their approval. We don't need your approval. We don't need you. It's like a Rebbe coming into class, and the Rebbe says, okay, for homework, I want you all to do this assignment. And all the students get up and they clap. Excuse me, I don't need you to get up and clap. This is not, I don't need your approval if I give you homework. It's not up to you, it's up to me. I'm the boss here, I'm in charge. So what does it mean over here? The Bezdin Shel Maila is approving of the Bezdin Shel Mata. What's going on? So let's see. Omar, Rabbi Shulman Levi. Shloi Shadvaram also Bezdin Shel Mata, V'Hiskimu Bezdin Shel Maila, Al Yodam. They agree, they gave their approval. Elohim Mikra Megillah. This that we should read the Megillah. Usha'ela shalom b'shem, that we should, Boaz said, Givarechacha Hashem. Time of Boaz, it appears in the passage that Boaz, when he would greet his fellow men, they would actually say Hashem's name. May Hashem bless you. They would actually say, that's also a whole shalom. I want to talk about
the
So we do it in a minor form. Meir is pointing out that the name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Shalom. One of Hashem's names, it's not one of the names that may not be erased, but one of Hashem's name is Shalom. So when we greet our fellow, we say Shalom Aleichem. That really means, may Hashem be with you. May Hashem be upon you. So we, to a degree, greet each other with the name of Hashem. We don't do it the way Boaz did it, by actually saying Yudke Vavke, but we do to a, in a smaller degree, we use Hashem's name. The Havoas Maasel Beis Hamikdash Ufikidei Habayis Yechalkum. In other words, they made an institution. They institutionalized the giving of Trumos and Maestres. Instead of what it was in the old days, it was the Wild West. Person has Maester, Truma and Maestres. What do? You look around, you take out the phone book, or you call up the Gabbai and your shul, you get a shul list. Who are the Kohanim and the Levim in the synagogue? And you take out a look at the list. Oh, he's a Kohen, he's a Levi, so you know what? I like this fellow, I'm going to give him Maester. I like this Kohen, I will give to him my Truma. What happened? So there are certain people that are very popular. There are people that everyone likes. People want favors from them. They're in a position of power. They can give shidduchim to give to this kohen. Give to the kohen to shatran. So if you go give the kohen the tshuva, he'll help you with shidduchim. So what happened was there are certain select individuals that everyone gave their tshuva and ma'aser because it was almost like a bribe. And all the other Kohanim and Levim, they got nothing. And they starved. So Chazal institutionalized the giving of Trumos and Maestros. And so this is a very dangerous thing. Because when you know, like, it's like you know, big government, this is, you know, the Republicans, Democrats. Once the government begins to take over your life, you know, that's a slippery slope. The most like Ronald Reagan's famous words, the most dangerous expression in society is, "Hello, I'm from the government. I'm here to help you." Those words are the most dangerous words, because that is the beginning of tyranny, of communism, socialism, totalitarianism, and the dangerous thing. So you know all of these Maamar Chazal, you know, when you're living in modern society, you read the news a little bit, it really takes on a whole new life. You read these things, you don't really think much about these things, but when you see what goes on in the real world, and you see today we live in the global village with technology, and you can mamish you can see what goes going on in the whole world and read what's going on in the whole world. These Mamari Chazal, they come to life in a way that has, we have a whole new appreciation. And you see the Chochmah, Chazal's incredible Chochmah, and having a proper balance between freedom. It's very fascinating that the Torah appears to be very, there's a lot of freedom in Chazal, in the Torah, but yet there's a lot of authority. And obviously there has to be a very delicate balance between freedom and an authority. And here it says they did this. This was not the way it was in the end. It used to be there was total freedom. You can give your tshuvas and maestros to anyone that you want. And this was the third thing that they did. They institutionalized giving of tshuvas and maestros. And here's what does it say? Here in the brackets, the editor told us what this means. Lebeis hamikdash, you would bring your tshuva and maestro to the office of maestros that was found in the Beis hamikdash. And the officers, the secretary, the treasurer, the officers of the Beis HaMikdash, of this office, they would distribute the truma and the meiser in equitable way to society. And furthermore, they also instituted that the Kohanim shall also get meiser rishoin. Im halavim v'sheyafrishu ma'aser mikol ha'peros v'hayirokos. That's nothing. This is the second takana, that the takana should divide the ma'aser rishon with the levim. In other words, they should get v'sheyakolam yichalgu ma'aser. I'm not sure what that means, because you give this trumas ma'aser, right? Isn't this trumas ma'aser? You give ma'aser rishon to the levi. And the Levi in turn gives 10% to the Kohen as Trumas Meiser. That I'm not sure if that's what he means, or he means that there was another form of distribution. I'm not sure, but let's go further. V'she'afrishu Meiser, because we know the time of Ezra HaKohen, Ezra took away Meiser Rishon from the Levim. Ezra Ponen, how could he do that? But he did it. This is a very challenging halachic principle. Ezra HaSoifer, as a punishment for the Levim, who refused to come to the Beis HaMikdash. There was a very great shortage of Levim and the beginning of the Tekuv of the Bayis Sheni. When they rebuilt the Bayis Sheni, there was a call to return. Everyone should come back to Eretz Yisrael. So a very small percentage of the population listened to Ezra and Nehemiah to return. And the big problem was there was no one to actually serve in the Beis HaMikdash, because you needed Kohanim, Levim, and Kehanim, it seems they were enough of, but Levim, there was a very great shortage. And there were, that's why they said the shortage of Levim is because of that, it goes back to that point in time. And the Levim, there were enough Levim in the world, in Golos, during those 70 years, that could have come back and served, but they didn't want to come back. And there was a shortage. So Ezra basically cursed them. And he said, as a punishment for not coming back, no longer should the Jewish people give you Meiser Rishon. The Meiser Rishon shall go to the Kohanim. How could you do that? How could that be done? So there's a discussion, a halachic discussion, that the Sheva Levi, what is called Sheva Levi. I don't know the Pratim, but there was a penalty that was applied to the Levim for not returning to the Beis HaMikdash. And I think that's what
we learned in Ezra Nehemiah. You said that they held out a carrot to the Levim to come back, that they gave them land.
I don't remember. And they still didn't want to take it.
They still didn't want to take it.
Even though they offered to give them incentives. gave them incentives to return. They didn't want to come. And here they punished them by taking away their Meiser. And the Meiser was to be given to the Kohanim. V'sheha Kohanim Yachleku Maaser Rishon Im HaLevim, they should get a more higher portion, whatever that means exactly, maybe lose to that. V'sheyafrishu Maaser Mikol HaPeros V'HaYirokos, is this halacha, this is a new thing that we discussed with Shemitah, another takana, Minatoyra, this is the Daf Yomi, the first Daf, Masechta Rosh Hashanah, talks about this, is that the first day of Tishrei, the first day of Rosh Hashanah for Maestros, and the Mishnah says for Yerokos, for vegetables. What is the Mishnah talking about? There's no such thing in our Torah of giving truma and meiser on vegetables. Vegetables and mikol ha-peiros. In our Torah, according to most of the Rishonim, you only give meiser and truma on the Shiva Saminim. Only on the Shiva Saminim, not on apples and oranges. Apples and oranges, you have an obligation to give truma and meiser. Not so. Only on grapes, figs, olives, dates, pomegranates, only on the Shiva Saminim. So where does it come to give meiser, truma and meiser, and apples and oranges, tangerines, pineapples, bananas, and vegetables, celery, all these things? The answer is it's a takanas chazal. When did this takanas chazal come about? It came about during this period of time, during the creation of the office of tithes, the tithes of the Jewish people. It was a new department that was established in the government of Eretz Yisrael, and the office was located in the Beis Hamikdash. It was funded by the Beis Hamikdash. They funded this office. Obviously, there were a lot of officers, a whole hierarchy, a whole institution. It was a major institution to go and to be equitable in distributing all of the Trumas and Maishas. Everything should come to a central location. It was basically the IRS of Klal Yisrael in the time of the Bayis Sheni. Isn't that what it's taxes? That's really what it is. You're giving basically 11% tax. A little bit less. You're giving about 10-11% tax. You have to first give one-fifth, really more. You have to give Maishas Sheni. Right, whatever, but you're giving a certain amount of money of your income, of the produce, to where? So ordinarily, you give it on your own. No one's IRS is not coming to look into your bank accounts. Anything that you give is $600. Right now, the IRS, they're going to start. Everyone knows the new thing that any transaction that you make in your private bank over $600, the IRS will know about. Not yet. It's coming soon. Coming soon to a country near you. I read also that the new budget that they're trying to push through for $3.5 trillion. You know what it says during that budget? That if a person dies, when a person dies, 60% of his assets go to the government. The Yerusha to the children is only 40%. Debt tax to 60%. Person doesn't give away all of his money before he dies, and you let it fall to
doesn't pay a certain threshold.
Isn't that amazing? 60%?
Doesn't pay to
die. It doesn't pay to live.
Of course.
Okay, it's unbelievable. So taxes is a very big thing. Once you give a person a finger, they take a hand. And you read about the new budget that they're trying to shove through. The mom is trying to play every dirty trick in the book to shove through. And you hear what it really says in this massive thing, and they tell you some glimpses of what it really says there. What they pushed in there, it's not to be believed. And this, I don't think people realize what it says. 60% of a person's assets will not go to his children. Will go to, not to his Yerushim, will go to the government. So how did that happen? It didn't happen overnight. That happened because there's a government that likes to collect tax. And first, you know, there's transparency and there's this, there's that. And before you blink, they're taking 60%. Before you blink, they're saying, we know everything that goes on behind the scenes. Every transaction that you make, until now, suppose the government, even though everyone knows that they do know what goes on, but they can't prosecute you. They can't punish you. It's illegal. But now, no, we have rights to know everything that goes on behind the scenes. Once you give someone a finger, ultimately they'll take a hand. And it's interesting when you understand that principle and you study history, you look at Chazal, until this point of time, the Torah says, give Meiser, give 10%. You give Truma, 1/50. Give Meiser, 10%. You give Meiser Shem, you go to Yerushalayim, stimulate the economy. Go to Yerushalayim every year. Go visit your children in seminary in Koilel. go visit them. And when you come there, the government in Eretz Yisrael love the Americans who come have children learning in Eretz Yisrael. You know how much money it brings into the country? An enormous amount of money. Come with your Maisa Sheini. Come to your Shalayim. Spend the money. You can't spend it, so just leave the money for other people to have you to eat the Maisa. It stimulates the economy and economics. So do it on your own. We trust you. Oh, now they said, we don't trust you anymore. Instead of giving the money to the Kohanim Levim you like, you give it to the government. And the government will distribute it to who they like. Sounds good, right? It sounds good. And what happens next year? It's a very dangerous, we know from history, it's very dangerous. Once you allow other people to control a little bit, you know there have to be checks and balances. It's almost never in the history of the world where liberties were taken away from people and were given back. It's a one-way street. When the government takes away liberty, this is a historical fact. Historical fact, when liberties are taken away from people, because the times call for it. Just temporary, when people will become more ethical and more honest, then we'll let you back, have your liberties back again. It never, ever, ever happens. When a liberty is taken away from a person, it's never, ever returned.
That's why World War II.
What?
A lot of liberty was taken away during World War II.
And was never given back.
It was given back.
Okay, all right, so you have to, this is what, maybe I'm reading conspiracy theories too much. I'm reading conspiracy theories too much, but there is some element of truth. So very nice. So what is this relevant for us? Well, and when you read this, a chazal like this, your eyes now, you have to use what you learn in society as an eye-opener. Until this point of time, there was no government. True, Mr. Maestros, you do by yourself. Now, they did these three things, and in Shamayim, they gave their haskama. They were masking, this is a very good thing to do, to take away people's liberties and to institutionalize the giving of tzedakah, in essence. V'she'afishu ma'aseh b'michol, and also, this is taxes. There's no halacha to give truma and ma'aser on fruits and vegetables. These are my apples and my oranges. Who says I have to go give the Levi some apples and oranges? Who said? Hashem didn't say that I should go. I have a basket of apples. I should go give some of my apples to the Levi. Let him get a job. Who says I have to give my apples? I gave him some grain and some raisins and grapes and figs. I have to give him my apples also? The Chazal said yes. Raise the taxes. You have to give tax from this, from this, and from this, and this. It's a chiddush. We take it for granted, right? What's the big deal? So you give some chuma and maaser from fruits and vegetables. What's the big deal? Well, it is a big deal. If you were living in a time when you were following what it says in the Torah, how the Ribbono Shel Olam didn't say to do this. Hashem didn't say that you should go and pay tax on this, and tax on this, and tax on this. So the rabbis come along and they say, hey, what's going on over here? You know, if you live in today, we're just brainwashed. Yeah, of course you're generous. Not so pasha, not so simple. Chazal said yes. And do we need the Shemayim to give a haskama? Torah lava Shemayim. These three things that the Gemara is telling us over here is very fascinating. Even though Torah lava Shemayim, there was still a need for Shemayim to give their stamp of approval. Which basically means is that even though there was a principle of Torah lava Shemayim, there were still strings attached. Read the fine print. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us the Torah Matan, and Hashem gave over Shlita of the Torah to Klal Yisrael, there were consent forms, and there were some provisions. Did you ever, when you install software on your computer, there's even one person in the entire world that ever read, before you install, you have to press I agree to the terms and conditions? Did anyone here ever read the terms and conditions on anything they ever did in their life? Anyone here lease a car? How many papers did you sign when you leased a car? About 20 papers? Did you even read one of them? Do you know that the average person in this country, when they lease a car, has committed about 10 felonies? You know that? At least 10 felonies when you lease a car. you sign about 20 papers with 20 conditions, and probably half those terms and conditions you don't fulfill. Okay, it's a very funny world we live in. Now, how do we know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave this haskama to these three things? So the first thing over here is, now, over here he's just jumping, over here he's not going back to the other three things, telling us the sources for the Megillah and for the institutionalization of the Maestros. He's just focusing over here he's not focusing on the Megillah, he's going to the second and third. Only the second one, the institutionalization of the Maestros. He's not focusing on the Peros and the Irakis. Avos Maestros Gosev Chaviyu, this is the pasuk. Chaviyu, the Navi, a Navi is speaking in the name of Hashem. It's not just the rabbis, the Chachamim, who are instructing us to institutionalize the giving of Tumas Maestros. It is actually a Navi. This implies that before the Navi actually said these words, already was done. Okay, Malachi is writing now at the time of the beginning of the Bayis Sheni. He died 40 years into the Bayis Sheni. So maybe this was even done during the time of the Bayis Rishon. And from the way the Gemara is explaining is that this already was done. This was already in practice where people no longer gave on their own Trumas and Maestros. People gave the Trumas and Maestros to an institution, and the institution distributed the Trumas and Maestros equally. Equity. Everyone should get a fair distribution. And now people are trying to cheat. They're cheating. And the Navi is saying, stop cheating the government. Give the Truma and the Maeser to the Beis Hamikdash. Haviyu. Bring it. Haviyu. Es kol ha-maaser al Beis Ha-Oitza. What? What's the Beis Ha-Oitza? See, this Chazal is Mamash explaining Pshuto Shol Mikra. What's the Beis Ha-Oitza? When you give Trumas and Maestros, you knock on your next door neighbor. Are you a Levi? Yes, of course I'm a Levi. Don't you know? I'm a Levi. Here is the Maeser.
He doesn't have a house.
What?
He doesn't have a Nachla.
That's why. Okay, he's renting. He's renting housing. He's renting. So you give. His name is not called the Beis Ha'Oitzer. What is the pasuk talking about? The pasuk doesn't make any sense. You're giving the maestros to a person. You're not bringing it to a district, to a center, to an office. It says in the pasuk Beis Ha'Oitzer, which means an institution, to the government office. Who's speaking here? The Navi is speaking. Well, the Navi represents HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The one who made this concept was a Beis Din. This is the Navi who speaks in the name of the Ribbono Shel Olam is giving a stamp of approval. This that the Rabbana have institutionalized the giving of Trumas and Maestros, excellent. This is a great idea. Hashem is masking. That's right. Listen to what the Rabbana say. Bring it to the Beis Ha'Oitzer. Even though in the Torah I didn't tell you to do it like this, I told you to give it directly, but I'm asking that it should be institutionalized and there should be oversight and there should be accountability to make sure that everyone is giving and every person that they need should receive. It's a haskama. Okay, so this is an amazing chazal. It seems to be very innocent, but really it opens up all of these issues. And one of the most intriguing things is, why do we even need their haskama? And obviously, it goes to show that there are limits. There are limits in Torah lav bashamayim. You have a corrupt Beis Din. In order for a student to be admitted into the Sanhedrin in the time of Chazal, in time when he had to give a PhD thesis in Halacha to prove that Chazer is Mutter. 49 reasons, you had to provide 49 reasons argue why Chazer is Mutter. You're allowed to go to Burger King and have chazer. What? That's how you admitted into the Beis Din. What do you mean? Beis Din Torah to chazer's treif. You have to be able to see through all the fraud. You have to be able, because you can take the Torah and you can use the Torah as a tool to manipulate. You can be deceptive. You have to be able to see through all the nonsense. The Torah says chazer is awesome. I understand there are people out there that are very clever. They go and they can manipulate, they can play with your mind, and they can provide these outrageous arguments, and they can convince a delicate mind that yeah, chazer is mut. When it says in the Torah, don't eat chazer, what it really means is this. No, the bottom line is chazer is aser. So Rachmana Litzlan, you can have a whole bezin of these corrupt people. It can happen. It has happened. You could have a whole bezin of corrupt people. How did Yaron ben Nevat? How did he do it? He convinced people. He made a new base on Migdash. Two of them, in Beis Alandon. He put up an Egel. He made a whole new base on Migdash, and he made a whole new calendar. And he took with him 10/12 of Klal Yisrael. How did he pull this off? It's unbelievable. How could a person go? It says in the Torah, you have a tradition, you have a Messiah, and how was he able to do this? Obviously, there are people out there that are very talented and very clever and able to pull off in front of your eyes the ultimate corruption and the upon time you turn around.
Korach also.
I had this whole thing yesterday. Guy comes out of prison, he's a very, very spirited person. And he gets very upset, and he also has a lot of issues. And he comes over to me yesterday, I don't know why he did this, and he says to me, I'm telling you, if I was alive during the time of Shabbosai Tzvi, he wouldn't have fooled me. I'm telling you a true story. Last night, the guy comes over to me, I know him very well. He's always very uptight, and he gets very upset about this. If I was alive at the time of Shabbosai Tzvi, I know there were Gedolei Yisrael that were swept up, that were fooled. I would have seen through him. I would never have fallen into the trap of Shabbosai Tzvi. I said, really? Are you still with many Gedolei Yisrael? You think you'd be better than them? Then I said, what about Korach? I asked him, what about Korach? Would you have fallen into curses? I don't know. I don't know. So I told him there's a Chazal. I don't know the Chazal. Someone who says that there's no one alive today. I don't know who says it. I heard this from one of the Gedolei. I think one of the Gedolei Yisrael. There's no one alive today. Had we been living in the time of Korach, would not have been totally swept up by Korach. The people who rebel, who stayed with Moshe Rabbeinu, they were very, very holy people. It seems like it was a very...
Over the times of Menashe being swept up by Avodah Zarah.
There was the Yates. All right, you pick up, so, if you were alive... I was thinking about the Gemara says that tomorrow, the Rosh, whatever one of the Amorayim, tomorrow we're going to give a shir on our friend Menashe, Achavareinu. So Menashe came to me in a dream and says, how dare you call me your friend? Who do you think you are? Ah, but you were from the worst of the worst. The mamish, he took Klal Yisrael down a path beyond return.
If you
would have lived in my time, when I went to worship of the Zara, I walked very slowly. If you would have been in my time, you would have picked up your pants to run. And you call me your friend, a chutzpah? Okay, so it has to be when the...
And when you make a bracha on bread, he said he was his rebbe. When you make a bracha,
where you cut the bread?
I'm your rebbe.
I'm your rebbe in this now. You don't even know the simple halacha. So the bottom line is, we have to appreciate, this Gemara at least touches on a little bit of a drop. There's a principle that everyone is familiar with, Torah lav bashamayim. The Torah was given to Klal Yisrael, the Malachim were very disturbed that Moshe Rabbeinu should be permitted to take the Torah, and everyone, oh, ner le'echad, ner le'meya, you learn Torah, we learn Torah. No, the shlita of Torah, the halachic decision of Torah is defined here in this world. That concept is directly challenged by this Maimer Chazal, where it says there are three things that the Chachamim did, and Shemayim had to give, and they were maskim. We don't need your Haskama, Shemayim. We don't need the Haskama. We got it. We need a pasuk here to say, Chavius Kolamas Lobeso Oitzer. Obviously, when it says Torah Laba Shemayim, there's some fine print. There are some terms and conditions. It's not 100% Torah. There's a limit. There are limitations and guidelines of how far it goes when you say Torah Laba Shemayim. Okay, let's finish up. Next, Maimer Chazal. My ad beli doy. What does this word mean? Three lines from the bottom. Rabbi Yossi Bar Shimon Bar Bo. That was his name. You know a person by the name of Bo? That was his name.
Rabba?
No, oh, you sang very good. Rabba. His name over here is called Bo. Do you know anyone in your life who's called Bo? Mr. Bo. What?
Bo.
So Rav Meir is saying something very interesting. Maybe really that's what it means, Rabba. Rabba, what's the resh? Maybe it means Rabbi Bo. It's interesting. I don't know what's the resh. I mean, the resh normally is short for Rav. Today we have many Rabbeinu Harav, all the different modern times. But that was his name, Rabbi Yossi Bar Shimon Bar Bo. B'shem, Rabbi Yochanan. This is also very typical of Yerushalmi. Yerushalmi, their names also, because very well, you know, there are letters that are missing. Very often in Yerushalmi, got to get into the sprach of the Nuskul Yerushalmi. There are many times there are the makatzer in writing in many words where you have to add extra letters. And he says, B'shem Rabbi Yochanan, Dover she'ev shel loymar olov dai, haim bebirchas kashamin, hu berocho ha'amur b'pasuk. In other words, you see, what are we referring to over here? This is what we start with today. You're not allowed to say to HaKadosh Baruch Hu enough. You're not allowed to say to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I don't want. So it seems, he takes this very literally, that he's coming to limit this thing that you cannot say to Hashem, die, to reign. Is that what he's trying to do? Let's say Hashem, in your bank, one day you wake up in your bank account every day, and more money comes, more money. So you want to be Mispel Hashem, enough zeros. I have enough zeros in the bank account. That you can do. You can say, Hashem, I don't want to be challenged. I don't want to be challenged by having too much money. Is that what it means to say maybe? The only thing that you cannot say to Hashem, die, is rain. Rain. Is that what he means to say? That's not what our Gemara is. That's not how we started. When we started, we said bracha. We didn't differentiate between rain and cash, cows, and assets, gold and silver. You now let us say to Hashem, I don't want bracha. Here he seems to be limiting this halacha only to rain. Now, by the way, you know that the old Lubavitchers, not today's Lubavitchers, but the old Lubavitchers, they did not use umbrellas. I don't think there's ever found a picture of the Rebbe. I may find your picture. Because rain is bracha. If you walk in the street and it's raining, you wanna, Hashem is showering you with bracha. Bracha, rain. You wanna be mafsik? You wanna go put an umbrella? Hashem, I don't want your rain. Using an umbrella is a statement, is a violation. That's the hats. That's what they all say. That's why their hats are ruined. That's, you taking an umbrella, in essence, is a way of saying, die. I don't want it to rain. I'm walking in the street, it's raining. I don't want the rain. You're taking an umbrella, your mamash, you're holding it up to Hashem. I don't want your rain. So the old Lubavitchers, not today's Lubavitchers, the old Lubavitchers, they refused. They, Beshita, would never ever use an umbrella. Because it is a violation of this pasuk. I'm soaking wet. I'm soaking wet with rain. You're not allowed to use an umbrella. Now, I don't think that they do that today anymore. I can't imagine.
They do sit in the sukkah.
That's a little bit of a mishagas, I think.
Well,
the Gemara says. The Gemara says the hedya. The Gemara says the farish. It's mitzvah. You wouldn't sit in the house. Teishu ke'ein to do. If you're in the house, you know. I have those. Had those times.
You're shrinking your house. What do you do?
What?
Leaking in your house.
You move.
You got a problem.
You don't walk out of the house.
You fix it. You call the plumber. You call the plumber. You call the roof, call the plumber. The plumber is like Mashiach. The roof is also, because I have time with the roofer. I have an heir to the plumber and the roofer are just like Mashiach. You know they're coming. You just don't know when. You know that when they'll get around to coming.
You know, you can't say bracha adli die. Right?
Yeah.
It doesn't say you can't say rain. You can't. It says
bracha. Okay, you're right.
Bracha. if you think the money is bracha, then you're not.
This is going back to the previous sukkim. We're dealing with, we learned this miser grow grain. Grain only comes out of the earth if there's water, when there's rain. The bracha, the reality, that whole sequence of sukkim discussing rain. So this is what it says in the Yerushalmi. It's not what it says in the Bavli. When we started today and we said, now that I ask Hashem that bracha should stop, it didn't make any distinction between rain and other forms of blessing. It's only in the Yerushalmi. And we have to also understand, is this what the Yerushalmi really means to say? I do not know. But that's what it seems. One more time, we still hear Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Shimon bar Bo, Rabbi Shimon bar Yochanan, Dovah She'iyav Shalom Loimar, Olav Dai. We're referring to something that is kind of forbidden for a person to say to Hashem enough. And what is this? Well, you should know this in the brackets. This is the editor. Where did the editor get this? One probably got it from the Pnei Moshe, one of the Mefarshim there on the Yerushalmi. Hainu Birkas HaGeshamim. Hu Bracho HaMu B'Pasim. Rabbi Berechia, Rabbi Chelboi, Rabbi Abba, Bar Ila, B'Shem Rav, Ad Sheyumu, Sif Sasecha, Nulaymar, Nulaymar, Dayenu Brochas. When it says "dai" means enough blessings. Maybe exactly that's the point of machlokes. It could be this machlokes. Is this referring to rain, or does this refer to other types of blessing? Is it forbidden for a person to say to Hashem, "I don't want enough"? So it seems this is a machlokes. The first opinion says it only refers to rain. Other things a person can say to Hashem, "Hashem, please, I don't want. Don't test me." It's an esayon. Too much bracha. Everyone's going to say, test me, I know that. But obviously, there are individuals that are very holy people. They're not interested. Not interested is not every person in their life. It depends on the tikkuf of your life. There are certain times when the person is like, I'm not interested. I'm not interested in this bracha. It's a challenge. People who are smart understand that. And it appears as a machlokes, what are the guidelines? All right,
is there such a thing that there's no such thing as gishmei klola?
There is. Oh, so that's a chani hamak. So, where do you draw the line?
I don't know.
I don't know.
Well, the Gemara tells the story when he prayed for rain.
Chani hamak. That's not what I asked for.
He told the chum, be careful and pray for rain, but don't ask me to tell him to stop.
Okay, we're going to stop here. We'll take a short break. We'll do something from the parasha afterwards.
Today is the yard sale.